Welcome to today's episode of the Career Confidence Podcast, where I sit down with the incredible Anu Villarosa, who is the current Chief People Officer at HWL Epsworth Lawyers. Anu's journey is so inspiring. She started her career as a lawyer, and then she moved into recruitment and now into the Chief People Officer after doing multiple HR director roles. She's also a mindset and performance coach, and we talk a lot about mindset in today's episode. So really lean into what Anu says. She comes up with some incredible tools and strategies that can really help us all adopt to this ever-changing landscape of work and how we can do it from a place of growth versus survival. So I really, really hope that you enjoy this episode. I got a lot from it. I got a lot of takeaways, things that I'm still pondering over myself. So over to Anu. Anu, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I am delighted to have you on today. Can you just give a bit of an introduction into who you are, your background, and your career journey so far? So over to you.
Yeah. Well, thank you first for having me today. It's great to be here. So who am I? I'm Anu Villarosa. I am a mum of four and currently the Chief People Officer at HWL Epsworth Lawyers in Melbourne, but we have a national presence. Career journey to date, well, it's a long one, but I'll try and keep it shorter than normal. So I started my career as a lawyer in the media and sports world, so, you know, corporate commercial work, and then moved in-house after about 4 years of practice. I then moved to Australia for 1 year, and to my mum and dad's dismay, never returned. So I came over here 18 years ago now and into the world of recruitment, and from there I've done roles in, you know, general manager roles, people in development roles, learning and development roles, innovation roles. And I've also run a business called Lead Energized. About 2 years after I arrived in Australia, I've sort of done that part-time while I've had my children, but also in addition to the roles that I've been doing.
Very interesting. We're going to dive into all of this, but it's funny because obviously I'm from the UK myself, and I got a year's working visa as well and packed a rucksack and said, see you in a year, mum, dad, and then never came home.
Yeah, so
this country, definitely, there's so many opportunities. I absolutely have fallen in love with Australia. I think it's an incredible place to live, and I feel very blessed that I get to call it home. So take me back, Anu, because you started your career as a lawyer. And now you're in HR. So I'm sure that you've actually picked up so many skills from doing law, recruitment. Like, how did that sort of transition come about? Like, you arrived in Australia. Did you just fancy a change? Like, what did that look like?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question because it actually started before then. And I think it's because I started my self-development journey a lot earlier than anyone, you know, before anyone had really heard of it, and was very curious as a lawyer generally. So one of the pivotal moments I think about in terms of, you know, where did I get the idea of maybe moving outside of law was when I went to a client. I was lucky enough to go to MTV. At the time I was working on secondment there. And very quickly I realized that people were not going to engage with legal. They weren't going to collaborate if they didn't trust us or they felt like we were a blocker rather than an enabler. So it was kind of lesson one for me, which was it didn't matter how good I was at the law. If my clients were not going to engage with me, then I couldn't provide any value. And so I spent a lot of time and I was very fascinated with human behavior, how people interact, how you influence people, how you engage with people, how you coach people, how you mentor people. And that was really early on in my career. I was a graduate lawyer at that time. And that was kind of the skill that I learned, that first engage with the person and then demonstrate competence. So that was kind of number one. Number two was I became acutely aware of my strengths and limitations early on in my career and, you know, became aware that perhaps I was really strong on the strategic negotiation side, so speaking, presenting, but I found that my energy would drop when I was doing things like drafting contracts. So I wanted to be a trusted advisor, but in a verbal sense, if that makes sense. And you know, I went to these meetings and at the time I was doing really interesting work because it was when we were streaming online for the first time to watch a football game. I worked for a sports broadcaster when Big Brother was on. So we were doing streaming work in the compliance space. I did the first iteration of that in the compliance team. So I think at that point, I was acutely aware of the work. It really energized me and I was really good at, and I got great feedback on, and the work that perhaps was a critical component of my role, but it wasn't that I couldn't do it, but I didn't love it, that it took energy, that I wasn't in my flow, all of the things we would now talk about quite fluidly, I was very acutely aware of. And so at that stage, I started to do a lot more reading into mindset, behavior, performance, and having been in professional competitive sport as well, just became really interested in, you know, knowing your talents, knowing your behavioral preferences, knowing what how to perform well. And that, to me, sparked the interest in taking some time out and trying something overseas. So it was as simple as saying, I'm going to come back to the law. I think I'm more people orientated than task orientated, with a very limited understanding at that time. And I'm going to go and see if that's true. And if I'm wrong, then I'll come back home. So that was kind of the reason to make the move.
How old were you, out of curiosity, when all this was going on?
So I think my awareness around 23, 24. I mean, interestingly, I'd studied to teach English as a second language, as an example, as something on the side, something to do, because I was interested in mentoring and coaching. So at a very young age, and part of my personality is I like to do lots of different things. And even studying law and going through law, everyone else was studying a master's in law. And I was studying, you know, teaching as an English as a second language. And I was reading Carol Dweck's book before anybody else, you know, had sort of come across those things. And reading about mindset and performance. So I was young, 24. I made the move at 28. So after 3 or 4 years of doing development, reading, external courses out of interest, I then decided to take the step, which was a big thing there. I mean, everyone said, you've got the best job in the world. You know, you work for Liverpool Football Club through ITV Sport and you do work at MTV and you've got amazing clients. And it was true. It was really true. But for me, I'm very experiential. And to me, it was like, I can go there and I can come back. Even if I go there for a year and it's a complete disaster, I'll just come back.
It's really fascinating as you're talking, because I can relate to a lot of the things that you're saying. So I came to Australia at 23 with a rucksack with just, you know, if I don't like it, I can come back. Like, nothing's permanent. And this has been a constant, like, I guess, saying I've had, like, I'll just try these things, because you can't split test life, right? So I want to have as many experiences as I possibly can, just to sort of identify, is that for me? Is that not for me? And like, you're very curious. But I feel like this is what holds a lot of people back, which is why I'm fascinated to understand, is it something that's built within us, or is it something that is, you know, this part of our upbringing? I'm really curious, because I do think that so many people hold themselves back because they're so fearful of all the things that could go wrong. And, you know, they live their life like thinking about the worst case scenario and not all the possibilities that could come from trying something new. So has that always been in your sort of like DNA, or has that just kind of come from, you know, parenting, like influences, programming? Where do you think that comes from?
Well, if we knew I think I get asked that question every day. It depends is the answer. So in my mindset work that I've done and research that I've done, what I've discovered is that we all have default mindsets. How aware of those mindsets we are and how situationally aware we are and the desire to change sort of overlays on that. So a natural propensity for certain personalities or behavioral types would be to be more optimistic and positive, and for other behavioral types to be more pessimistic. So I think there's a DNA component of it. And then, of course, your environment overlays that. And I describe the language I would have heard, or many lawyers, as example, would have heard going through school, which will inform our hardwiring. So, you know, you never fail. You'll always get good grades. You'll nail everything you do. The expectation is that you will get an A. So you kind of go through this world of perfectionism and imagining what could go wrong, so you work harder to achieve, you know, or things my parents would have said to me, like, you know, buy one house, invest in one house, you know, that hardwiring that you go through and you get through, you know, religious institutions, family, friends, we hardwire that. And so unless we challenge it, it becomes our GPS for life. So in any situation, as human beings, we tend to be simple, or we look for safety. So what do? In our comfort zone, we apply the coding we ultimately have day in and day out. Now, if your personality is more driven on the side of curiosity, opportunity, positivity, you are more likely to be able to be reflective and think about that or try something new and have a go. But if you are more skeptical and pessimistic by nature, then your reluctance without the knowledge, as I call it, to know, to reflect and change, means that you will apply this on autopilot. So I think the simplicity of a human being is we do things the way we've always done them, unless we have a reason to change. And that reason doesn't need to be earth-shattering, you know. But if we don't have a reason to change, we're always going to do the same thing over and over again because it creates simplicity in our life and it keeps us safe. Like we brush our teeth in the same way, we put the toothbrush in the same position, we wash our hair the same way. We don't really need to change that if it's not working. But, you know, if our alarm clock snooze button 3 times is not working and we get, you know, someone at work saying it's not good enough that you're not on time, that's forcing a change. So the answer is that I think we have default wiring that if we're not aware of and don't grow and build on to provide more options in our menus to deal with situations, then yes, we tend to come from that default position.
You said something really interesting there. It's a lot of interesting things there, actually. I do think it's really hard for people to change. And I think the first step to change is awareness. I think once you're aware of something, you have the power to change it, right? So this is all going back to sort of the mindset piece. And I want to come back into your career journey in a second because, you know, you've had so many incredible steps. But this is sometimes the missing piece. When I interview people in, you know, who've gone on to achieve amazing things in their career, I don't think there's as much like of a focus point around that person's mindset. So do you think it's possible? Let's just say someone's listening to this right now and they are saying, do you know what? I probably am slightly more on the negative side. I am a bit risk averse. Can they change? Is it possible? I mean, it's hard, I know, but through your work, through your sort of mindset and performance coaching, which we're going to go on to as well, can people change and how can they change? How do they take that first step?
Absolutely is the answer, because I've seen it time and time again. And you're right. It's not about being hard. It just takes more energy. So if you think about the fact that for some people have a natural propensity, they're energized by that, they're more likely to do it. So absolutely starts with a recognition of what I call your ecosystem. So your toolkit and your ecosystem. So what is my natural default mindset? You know, what do I, if someone said to me, hey, I want you to do a presentation in 5 minutes, what's my immediate self-talk around that? So starting to understand your natural communication behavior preferences, your natural strengths and talents that you have, and your natural, where that comes from. So, you know, why do some people lean into things and not lean into things? So I think there's a bit of discovery. For me, I do a discovery session when I meet with people in a work context, in a coaching context, to get how they perceive the world, what they feel about change, why they feel that way, what's in their toolkit that can help them you best utilize their energy, if you like, to make the change. So everybody can change. There needs to be a belief that you can change, because there's a concept, I don't know if you've heard of Martin Seligman, of learned helplessness. So I found that a lot of people I work with, they will do a little bit of the work. They won't get the result they want as quickly as they want because we want instant gratification. And then we get this kind of learned helplessness, or it can't be for me, or I knew I was right. And again, you tend to get that with people who have that fixed kind of mindset to start with. So the answer is you can absolutely change. We know from neuroplasticity that you can grow the thought patterns and pathways in your brain. The reality is if you don't do something differently, you will get the same result over and over again. So it's not just going to magically happen to you. And, you know, like I say to lawyers when I'm developing them, it took you how many years to practice proficiently as a lawyer? Mindset change takes years of work. And, you know, there's a lot in out there around mindset hacking and reframing. And I think that's great. Don't get me wrong. In the moment, do we have tips and tricks to help you do something you don't want to do and push you over the edge to do things that are challenging? Yes, but long term we'll default back. And so the mindset work needs to be deeper than reframing what we're saying to ourselves in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so, so powerful. So you went on this obviously transforming journey. You know, you've read a lot of books, started to understand yourself, your mindset and things, and then you came to Australia. So take us to that point, arriving in a brand new country, you know, sort of like probably not knowing anyone. Like I've been there, I've experienced it. It's quite daunting. But then that optimism, that good mindset kind of made you sort of go, right, I've got this. So tell me a little bit about the next sort of step for you when you first arrived in Australia.
Yeah, well, it was really good in one sense and horrific in the other, because I hit the ground at the peak of the financial crisis in Australia. So I arrived on my day one in a recruitment role, and there was like 20 roles. And then by day three, there were none. Yeah. And what I'm pretty smart, and I realized pretty quickly that I'm first in, first out, and, you know, was working with the team there to see what I could do. But I knew that the writing was on the wall if things didn't change. And so I was thinking about other opportunities and what else I could do. And after my short stint in recruitment, it was about a year, I learned what it felt like to feel uncertain myself. And perhaps before I had like controlled change, so I had time to reflect, I was in a role and suddenly I found myself in a position where I didn't have the security of a role. I was in a new country, but I needed to find another role. And so I took a role in a law firm and I took a pay cut to what I was as a graduate lawyer. There was an opportunity to be an HR consultant in a mid-tier, large-ish firm in Melbourne. And I met with the CEO and it was a massive pivotal moment for me, because he said, if you're willing to back yourself, I'm willing to support you to come into this area new, but I will progress you according to how much effort you put into the role. And so it was probably the first time I felt apprehensive but excited at the same time. And, you know, to everybody I spoke to, they said, don't take the role because it's not enough money. You know, go back into law. You'll find a role in Sydney. Go to Sydney. You'll find a role. It was my comfort zone, right? Because I tried something and it was either I go home back to what I know, or I go into the field that I know, or I take a huge pay cut with a lot of faith that I will learn what I need to learn to deliver on this role. And within 6 months, I was made the head of HR in that role. So that was my experience in Australia, which was humbling, to say the least, having been in quite sort of high-profile roles in London. But it also taught me a lot about myself, and that during that time of uncertainty and when I was between jobs, I started my business as well. And started to coach a few clients.
It's just like these stories that are just so powerful, because we just sometimes need to listen to that intuition, right? We need to just sort of like even when you were speaking then about reflecting on pivotal moments in my life, like I came to Australia with a rucksack. I was basically like running this clinic, and I was like doing like, I was like skincare work and like, you know, like all this sort of stuff with like sort of linked to skin and laser and anti-aging and stuff. And I really enjoyed that. But I had this opportunity that sort of like came to me through a client that came into the clinic quite frequently. She said, have you ever thought about recruitment? You'd be really good at it. And I was like, oh, not really. She was like, well, you know, there's a position at this company. I think you should go for it. You know, you're really good with people. That's kind of like the main thing you need to be good at. So I was like, okay, give it a go. Anyway, obviously the rest is history, because I walked into the agency and got the job. But again, a lot of people said to me, what are you doing? Why are you changing careers? It's completely different tech recruitment from like, you know, all this, you know, the work you're doing in like skincare and stuff. Like, why are you changing? But so it just felt right. I couldn't quite describe it. I was like, no, I'm ready for a change. I'm ready for something fresh. And the company took the chance on me. And now I've run my own recruitment company. So it's like these sort of things happen. If you back yourself, you take these risks. But I think it's so easy to stay in your comfort zone and to stay in what you know. And I think that that is probably one of the biggest mistakes I see people make in their careers, especially early on in their careers, where you can take a few more risks. I think your 20s should all be about just building up your knowledge, having as many experiences as possible, working for a few different organizations, getting a few different roles, getting your hands in lots of different pies and just experiencing different things, because then you know what you want, you know what you're good at, and you start to sort of develop your strengths and your character. And I think that this big myth of we got to go to university, graduate, get the job, stay in the job, you know, and that's it. Like, I think that there's more to life than that. And if you've got this creative, obviously you had that quite entrepreneurial spirit, you've got to honor that. Otherwise you can really end up just waking up one day and go, God, how did I get here?
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. I mean, I work the other end where people are in their role. They've been in their role for a really long time, and the fear of moving or changing would paralyze them because they have created a world of comfort and they don't know how to navigate challenge or change.
Well, that's the other trap as well. As you get older, you've got a mortgage, you might have some kids. So let's talk about this now. So you obviously backed yourself, you got this role, you were the HR director at this big law firm. Incredible, right? Like absolutely amazing. When did you start having children, and when was all that sort of like, you've got your business, like there's a lot going on?
So I had my daughter, who's now 13, when 3 years after I started in the HR director role. So I left, I had her, and then did the kind of local 3 day a week role, alongside, you know, running my business. And then, that wasn't fulfilling me. It was a different industry. It wasn't for me. Like I've got long, lifelong friends from that organization. But again, I did that same reflection of, you know, is this for me? Is this where I want to be? Is this where I want to be in the next 2 to 5 years? And my view is, be loyal while you're there with the company, do a great job, but then, you know, be honest in your conversations. And so a role came up with a law firm, in a national law firm in Melbourne, as their HR manager part-time. The organization was incredibly innovative, wonderful organization. Can't speak more highly of it. And the managing partner at the time was very open to people kind of doing things entrepreneurial on the side, if you like. So that allowed me to continue 1 day a week with my business, and I worked 4 days a week. And I started as the HR lead for Melbourne as the office was growing. And then I was made general manager. And ironically, I was offered the job when I was I had really severe morning sickness with my second child, Joel. So I remember the conversation very well. In a room where I was wearing like a sickness band, you know, like you can wear those sickness bands that you wear on boats. And I was drinking my lemon cordial with ice in it because I was feeling sick, and it was something that helped me. And there was a conversation which said, you know, we'd really like to offer you the role of general manager, this bigger role. And I'm sitting there going, one child, I work part-time, I've got a business, I'm pregnant with my second child. And, you know, that was a 24-hour reflection on whether I was going to take that role. And that was another pivotal moment, because it was about expanding my skill set into operations as well, which I hadn't done before, and the financial side of things. And that was stage two, general manager for that firm.
So let's just pause there, because that's huge. So you're pregnant, you've got a young child at home, you've got a side business, and you just said yes to this new role. What made you do that? Like, what were you sort of thinking and at the time?
Well, maybe it's the way I frame things, but I was like, why not? Or what would stop me from taking this role? And none of that inhibited me delivering on the role, as long as there was an element of flexibility that I could continue with, and a transparency around, you know, my limitations in the next sort of period of time, because I'd be taking time off. But for me, it was about, why wouldn't I take this role? Why not? And what support do I need from the organization to do that? And I felt very comfortable with the organization I was working with, that I could take that step. So I have a propensity to say yes and worry about it later. But in this case, I did think carefully about it, given, you know, I was pregnant and I was thinking, do I disclose I'm pregnant, not pregnant? But instead, I took the role and I learned what I needed to do, and stepped into that role for what was then a couple more years. So I did that role for 2 years, and then that led nicely to probably one of my favorite roles, which was the head of learning and development, and the kind of into this world of, this just feels right. I love doing this work. So away from operations, which I didn't dislike, but, you know, into this idea of development. And that's when I started to do the further study around neuro-linguistic programming. I became an exec coach, did a coaching course. I became accredited in a bunch of different psychometric tools, and did various leadership programs, and started to design and deliver programs for professionals and then for clients. So then that evolved into a client offering around development sessions. A lot of my work focused in the mindset behavioral space, but, you know, doing anything from how to influence, present, brand, et cetera.
Incredible. I want to just the questions that you asked yourself before you took that role. And I think I'm a big believer of, like, the quality of your life will be determined by the quality of your questions. Had you have asked negative questions, like, oh, you know, what does this mean for me? What does this mean for my family? Like, focused on sort of like all the things you couldn't do as opposed to all the things that you could do. It's that mindset shift, that perception shift, that was so powerful that you sort of meant, well, why did I not take this?
Yeah.
What would be stopping me from taking this? Like, yeah. You know, and I think you just backed yourself again, which is again, just these, like, I guess, insights to success of why you have achieved what you've achieved. So I'd love to now dip into your business, right?
Sure.
Your performance leadership, because that's, I can imagine, has really helped you in your career path. And now when you go into the organizations, you're creating learning and development, you know, you're sort of dealing with people day to day from your HR perspective role. What part do you see that this whole mindset like actually play a part in how people perform, how people show up, how people lead? How important is it?
That's critical. And I think because I started my world in sport, and it's, you know, we talk about sports psychology now, but it was never a thing. You know, when we were playing sport, it was, when are you training? How are you recovering? How are you sleeping? And there was always this collection of data around that. So the physical side, but also how are you preparing? What do you do as your ritual, your performance ritual we talked about in terms of before you play a game, reflecting after, like it was kind of, you were much more in tune with your thoughts and feelings when you were playing sport. But that wasn't the case when we came, you know, usually when you came into the corporate world. I mean, you can ask people, what's your communication preference? And they may say, I don't know. Or, you know, do you think about your thinking? Like, what's your natural default position? Or what do you say to yourself in these situations? And for a lot of people I work with, no one's ever really taken a moment. They might be able to answer the question, but they've never taken a moment to think about that. And so for me, mindset drives behavior, which drives action. Now, just because you hack or change your mindset, it doesn't mean you're going to behave in a way, but there's a strong correlation that you will. So to give the example of this, questions I'm asking, like, why would I not? What support would I need? How can I enable this? It's more likely to lead to an answer that is positively framed in, as an opportunity rather than a blocker. Okay, so I'm more likely to get a response that then drives behavior. But alongside mindset, you've also got to do the behavior and the action and be courageous in that behavior and action to help build the mindset long term. But mindset's critical because there's very few people I know that who say, I really don't want to do that. And I use the analogy of getting in an ice bath because I have a really great story around. I'm very positive, but I had this thing about I hate the cold. And I went on a health retreat and there was an ice bath, and I'm someone who's got a lot of grit and determination, and I care what people think, and we were in a big group, and I was like, I hate the cold, but I'm getting in. And that's why I talk about like a mindset hack in the moment. It's like, okay, I'm thinking that I really don't want to do this and it's terrible for you and I'm going to hate it, but I just got in. But as I come away, my behavior is not going to change if I don't question and think about the mindset that sits behind it. So maybe it's not that I hate cold, maybe that it's, I feel the cold more than other people. And, you know, I don't want to, I'm happy to experience being in the cold because it might have a strong health benefit. So that shows you the difference between we can hack it and change it, but unless you kind of explore mindset and you work on it and you build what I call new coding, you're never going to get a different response when you're put under pressure then. So what you want to do is build unconscious change in your mindset so that when you're faced with different situations, you've got more options, like on a menu, like no longer burger and chips, I've got Palmer, I can have something else. And these options will come up to you. And don't forget, at that time, I'd done a bit of mindset work. So those questions I was asking myself may not have been intuitive. They were kind of custom built. Some people do it more intuitively. You meet some people and they are very open and opportunistic, and other people are not. And so it is about understanding what I call, what's your default mindsets that you bring to things? And I ask questions to establish that, because once you know where your starting point is, you can change or refine for people that are very good at it. So to me, mindset's everything. I'm yet to find someone that says, I feel horrific about something, but I got a positive result. Unless it's like a forced situation like the ice bath, like, which is my mindset saying no, but my behavior is being driven by some other motivator. But 9 times out of 10, how we think about something links to our behavior.
I completely agree with you there. And do you know what? Also, I listen out a lot for people's language. That fascinates me. When I listen to people, obviously I speak to a lot of people every single day.
Yeah.
I'm working in recruitment, I'm making multiple calls, clients and candidates, and through gratefully this podcast. And I really listen to language and what they're saying. And it's fascinating to me because I think that really is a little bit of an open door into what's going on in their heads. But like you just said then, you said, I hate the cold. But then you changed it to be like, you know, well, the cold has benefits. It's got this, it's got it. And you started being, again, I'm very aware when I'm speaking what I'm actually saying, because I don't want to speak things into being as well. And I think, you know, I always listen. It's fascinating to me. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, I was having a coffee over the weekend, and I was overhearing this woman, and she had a sling on. And for literally the whole time I was sat having my coffee, she was talking about how just all her health, the accidents, everything that was going wrong in her life. And I thought, listening to her language and conversation, there was no surprise that she had a sling on her arm, because it was almost her identity. I have accidents, I have poor health, and that had become who she was. And what I find fascinating with people, and like you, I'm really always been fascinated by human psychology, about why do some people go on to live these phenomenal lives where they're happy, healthy, successful, and other people really struggle. But then if I was to spend time with the people that were struggling, I could probably pinpoint quite quickly why their life was going the way it was, versus people who were healthy, successful, happy, had good relationships. Oh, that also makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, carry on.
No, you go, because I was going to
just from identity, I do it. There's a really great, I call it like the 3P analogy when I'm working with people, is like, what persona are you taking on? What's the perspective? What's the plan? And it's linked to your thing of saying like self-awareness, situational awareness, strategic awareness. So in my mind, for anyone to change something, they need to first understand themselves and their natural propensities, their mindsets, their natural behaviors, how they like to communicate. So pessimistically, optimistically, make decisions quickly, make them slowly. Situational awareness, which is, you know, can they take themselves out? That's that perspective. Can they take themselves out of their situation as a third-party bystander and say, when I look at this from a third-party perspective, what am I hearing and seeing? What's the perspective? That's your situational awareness. So to that person, it's the norm for them, right? So to behave in that way or to speak in that way. But if I take a third-party perspective and change my perspective and I look in, what are my thoughts and feelings on what this person is saying to themselves? And then the third part, which is, you know, plan or strategic, if you want to be more formal, strategic awareness, is, well, what's the plan to shift from A to B? So it always starts with the, you know, tell me about yourself, tell me why you think you do that, where does that come from? And then it's like, okay, let's take a different perspective, a different viewpoint. What's the situation in front of us? Or what's the third party perspective if I look at this? And is it serving you for where you want to go? Is it helping you? Is it hindering you? And if it's hindering you, what's the plan to get from A to B? So it's kind of that self to situational to strategic to help anybody navigate through. Some people do it really well. I describe it though, they can do it in like quite a raw way. So people that I work with who have a natural propensity tend to be a bit haphazard and ad hoc and lack consistency. Whereas people who have a less of a propensity and more pessimistic are quite structured. So you kind of got to work with the person as well. You got to work with their own world, how they see the world, their own behavioral preferences, how they like to talk, how they like to show up. So I think with anything like that, it's more than I just need to change the way I talk to myself. It's like understanding the person first and the situation or the perspective, and then building a plan with them. So it can be quite tailored. For those that are great, it's refining, because they might just be all over the place and lack consistency. And for the person who just does it over and over and over again, it's often because they have a very structured way of being and they see things in the same way and they don't have an open-mindedness to that. So the first starting point is, were you aware that this was the case? And for a lot of people I work with, they have no awareness around that. No one has ever pointed it out to them, or they haven't heard it in the right way. So I think around, you know, mindset work and working with different people and seeing their perspective is getting curious about how they see the world and their perception of it, but not just theirs, helping them see it from a third party perspective as well.
And this is all really powerful for leadership. Anyone that's leading a team, anyone that's sort of trying to inspire, motivate other individuals, it's really trying to understand people at their core. What is their motivators? What do they want to achieve? So this whole mindset leadership piece is huge. And as technology advances, which is going to advance at a crazy pace, I don't think we can even predict at this stage.
Yeah.
But these human skills, these critical skills, these leaderships, this empathy, this curiosity, this open mindset that we all need to adopt moving forward is going to become absolutely critical. When you mentioned Carol Dweck, and I love her work, like Growth versus Fixed. Do you think that, and I do think we all need to have growth mindsets over the next sort of 2-3 years. Do you think people can go from a fixed to a growth mindset? Because I think this is going to become more and more important as the world speeds up.
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I think people need to be honest at where they're at in terms of their mindset to start with. The biggest challenge I've seen is when people think they've got a growth mindset when they've got a fixed mindset. And unless you've got someone guiding you through the questions to help you build that self-awareness around it, it's really hard. You know, the person that you heard speaking, you know, did she think she had a fixed mindset? She may not have thought that. But, you know, if you took her through a series of questions to define the two and say, how would you respond to this? How do you respond to feedback? And you showed her that one's more aligned to a fixed mindset than a growth mindset, then maybe you could raise her self-awareness. So I do believe it's possible, but I do believe that there needs to be an openness of where people are at to start with. And there needs to be an element of practice, a repetition, which, like I said, it's not just a click your fingers and I hack my mindset once and say, I don't want to look at that one way. I need to be open. You've actually got to be habitually doing things that align with a growth mindset, you know? So it's easy to sit at home and do your affirmations and visualization and all of those things. But, you know, if you don't take the relative action to align with the mindset, then you're not going to move the dial. So yes, I do, but there needs to be a bit of work that goes with it. I don't think it's simple as saying, yeah, I'd really like to be a growth mindset person and that's how I'm going to be because I'm going to change what I say to myself and, you know, I'm going to get the result.
Yeah, really powerful. I'm just smiling here as well because you were sort of saying affirmation, visualizations. And when I was really at the start of my personal growth journey, I really got into meditation and visualization. And I'd start my morning and I'd close my eyes and I'd visualize, you know, how will my day to look, how will my future to look. And I do find visualization very powerful. It's something I do every single morning still. But in the beginning, what was really interesting is as I was building my awareness of my thoughts, I thought, oh my God, I'm having some crazy thoughts. And I was just like, the more I became aware of actually what was going on in my mind, like in those meditations, I was shocked actually, like how my mind was just sort of drifting off into these thoughts. Sometimes a worst case scenario. And I identified that I had a habit or a loop of some worry because I used to get really bad anxiety in my sort of mid-20s. But through, I guess, becoming more aware, through meditation, through becoming more aware of my thoughts, it's almost like I could stop them before they became emotions, before they kind of took over. But that was really, really powerful. And that was kind of my first step. And I think anyone that's sort of starting this journey of understanding themselves at a deeper level, they're going to come up against themselves. And that was quite confronting for me when I started to actually see what was going on behind in my subconscious. And I was like, wow, didn't know I was holding on to that. Wow, didn't know I thought that way about that person. All that's in, like, it was really interesting. And it was uncomfortable. It was really, really uncomfortable. And the more I did it, the more I overcame myself. Every meditation, like sometimes I went really deep. Sometimes it was just literally just trying to quiet my mind. And some days it was impossible. But what do you see when you're sort of coaching people? Is that quite common to like really have to sort of overcome themselves and realize that actually maybe they have got quite a bit to work on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've all got a lot to work on. I don't think the journey, it's never static.
Yes.
And, you know, talking about growth mindset, you know, it's a daily work practice for me and with my clients, and I learn from my clients along the way and I learn from people I work with every day. It's a really interesting thing because, as I said, people tend to try things a little bit and it's easier just to default back. So, you know, you do have to think about the fact that it's hard and growth is hard and coming across these things can feel scary because it's not something you've done before. So for most people, ultimately we like certainty and control. And when we don't have certainty and control, and doing a meditation or finding yourself doing deep breathing exercises, cold pump, whatever it does to help you get to that part of the brain that really lets you just look at and observe your thoughts. People find it really difficult not to judge based on that. So in meditation, I can't stop thinking. Everyone else is thinking. People care what other people think, you know. So if you're in a yoga class and people are like, I don't like it because they're saying, don't think about anything or think about your foot, and I'm thinking about my washing for the day. That's normal. I mean, I think normalizing the fact that our brains work at a million miles an hour, and the only way to get some control over your thoughts and feelings and to build more perhaps healthier thoughts and feelings at the same time is by understanding them as the starting point. You can't change something that you don't understand. So knowledge first. A lot of the times when I'm doing the early part of that, it's just about write it down, write down what's coming up for you. Don't think about it. Don't try and solve it. Just get a feel of it and theme it sometimes. You know, how does it come up? Is it different on a different day? Just look at it like an observer. And again, that's where that third party observer can help people who feel a bit confronted when it's their own thoughts. Okay, I want you to look at your thoughts and what you say as if you're a third party looking at it. So you just got to, your role is to write it down and for us to discuss it, not as if it's something that's right or wrong or should or shouldn't be, but just what it is and when it happens and what the factual side of it is. Sometimes that moving away from the personalizing it so much is easier for people.
Definitely. Definitely. But look, we've spoken a lot about mindset. I knew we would because it's a passion for us both. And I think it's something that, you know, even sort of mental health disorders have gone on the rise. And I do think there's a lot of people that are really struggling right now. I think it's been a hard couple of years for a lot of people. I think a lot of people are still on a bit of a COVID hangover and all that sort of stuff they went through there. And it has been a really tough sort of few years for a lot of people. And I think that the most important thing is it's like, you're not alone, but there are things that you can do to, you know, help. And, you know, like, this is why I love having people like yourself and having these sorts of conversations. But I'd love to sort of, like, I guess, go to your current role now. And I guess all of this work that you've done on yourself, you continue to do on yourself, like, and now in this position that you're in now, like, what, again, it's like all coming back to like, how this has all helped you become the person you are today, continue to sort of like progress in your career. How much are you using all these skills and these tools in your day-to-day job? And what is like your sort of day-to-day sort of work look like and feel like right now?
Yeah. So I'm the CPO of an organization of 1,700 people, including 250 partners, so law firm partnership nationally. So I have a team of about 35 people dispersed across Australia at different levels. And so my role is very strategic, somewhat operational, where I get my sort of head under the hood. I've only been here for 3 or 4 months, but very strategic, coaching orientated. So I do a lot of coaching work, mentoring and coaching the team and their development as well, and being strategic about what we do and why we do it from a people perspective. So that's the role.
Amazing. And where do you see yourself? So like, obviously you've got your business, I'm still guessing you're sort of very much involved in that sort of business, growing that out. And
so I don't do the businesses. I do more volunteer work at the moment. Mm-hmm. So I've done some work with some sports clubs and I continue to do a little bit of work on a volunteer side because I'm working full time in this role. Mm-hmm. So in my prior roles, I've been working sort of part time, but you know, I still help people, or I have a great network of people that I refer to. And I tend to be mentoring a lot more than I used to, just because I'm juggling, you know, 4 kids and a role. So for me, I'm not building the business at the moment, but, you know, do I have an occasional conversation if someone really interesting wants to come and have a session, then I'll absolutely take it, whether that's an athlete or a corporate person or a female looking to transition in a role. So I do have it, but I'm not building it. It's very much, if I get the occasional thing here and there, I'll take it, but it's very limited given my commitments to this role.
Fair enough. And I think that's honoring those seasons of life as well, isn't it? And it's like, when I do something, I want to do it with excellence. And this is such a big role that you've got now. It's like you want to give that your all. But the fact that you're in a capacity of mentoring and coaching in that position, like you will have so much impact within the organization and help so many people that will then go on to then have a ripple effect on their teams and their families and things. So yeah, really, really powerful stuff. But just for, I guess, sort of final sort of couple of questions, Anu, before we wrap up, but if someone's listening to this right now and they're just like, right, this is great, Georgia, you know, like, you know, all this mindset stuff and, you know, but I'm feeling really stuck right now. I don't like my job. I'm not earning what I need to support myself and my family. You know, I'm not feeling healthy. I'm not feeling energized. To be honest with you, I just want to like get to the end of the year and just flop and drop, right? What do you say to that person? Like, where can that person begin that doesn't maybe already come from that quite optimistic risk-taking sort of mindset? Like, where can they begin?
Yeah, I think start with curiosity of yourself. So, you know, where do those comments come from when I, you know, when I say I'm stuck or I can't move? Like, where does it come from? Was it someone in your family that said that to you? Who said it that was influential? What made you believe that that was the truth? So I think start with questioning some of your own thinking. So jotting it down, as I said, observe your thinking in a non-judgmental way. It's not a, you know, I have to do it. But I say to people, start to do some reflection around the way you think. Bring in some questioning at the end of each day that's unrelated to the outcome you're looking for. But, you know, what do I do well? What might I do differently? What am I learning about myself? So some of the observation of thoughts, but also some of that deeper reflection on your week or your day or your month, just to get a feel of where's your starting point. So for some people, they might say, I don't do anything well. I can't say anything any day. Or I find that when I get to learn about myself, I've learned so much about myself. I've now learned all these things. Like, these are my strengths. These are what I'm good at. I find I'm much more people orientated or task orientated. So I say to people who are trying to solve the unsolvable problem, do something different to start with. So open up the mind around jotting down the way you're thinking and feeling, asking some three reflective questions. What did I do well today to get yourself into a positive mindset? What might I do differently? And what have I learned about myself, learned about myself? Do that for a period of time, so to 2 months. So let's get you to Christmas on just doing some reflection. And that will do that, build that self-awareness. It will build the awareness of why you think the way you do, how you naturally think in given moments, what you need is a security blanket. So we will act in certain ways when we're put under pressure. So reflecting after you're put under pressure, what's your immediate response? You know, for people that need people security, they'll often text or call someone. It's a natural reaction. So they have a difficult conversation, I go to somebody else. It's not good or bad. It's just trying to understand your own ecosystem, the way you think, the way you feel, what your natural and habitual behaviors are, and start to learn about what your strengths and talents are. That's the starting point. And then I would say that's absolutely step one. And then step two would be, how can you start to build in mindset practices and behavioral practices that would support the bits we want to change? Because some of it, it's like, I see you, it's not affecting me, it's not hindering me, keep going. So that's just the leave it, right? The stop, start, keep mentality. I'm just going to keep that. That's not helping me. That's helping me, or it's not helping me or hindering me. So it just can kind of stay. And then what's really getting in the way? And then just really focus on working on what's getting in the way. So I think, to your point, when we've got speed of change, lots coming at us, expectations, fast world, we kind of run into things like, oh, it's all too much, and we get overwhelmed, or we don't do anything, right? So we go at something without having any plan, or we just completely retreat. It's like the flight or, you know, fight or flight mechanism or freeze mechanism. I think the best thing to do when we're in that rut is just to take the pressure off and do some reflection, which allows you to observe without judgment and just get used to reflecting on who you are as a person and how you operate.
Absolutely. And I think this time of year is such a powerful time to do that as well, as we close off 1 year, come into another one. It's like reflecting of, like, you know, not all the things that maybe haven't worked out. I feel like that's what people do. Like, oh, didn't hit my goal this year, didn't lose the weight this year, didn't get that promotion this year. Actually, what's gone well this year?
Yeah.
Start there. I don't think many people do that. They don't want to give themselves credit. And it's like, I used to be like this. It's like, I can only relax when I deserve it. I can I can only switch off.
Where did that
off.
Come from, Georgia? I'm interested. Where did that thought process come from?
100% my dad. He was very hardworking. He's definitely definitely got that from my dad. My mom can switch off instantly. She can just open a book, flop and drop. But my dad was somebody that was very driven. And I remember watching him as a little girl. So I know that like that's definitely a program that I have as well. This whole thing of like being deserving of a break. Like, you know, and I've really had to go on a big journey with that because I tied a lot of my sense of worth into my work and being productive.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
You know, oh, it hasn't been a good day today because I've only made 50 calls and I said I was going to make 100. So I'm a failure. Like that whole perfectionism, it's been a massive journey for me to go on.
Yeah,
a lot of unraveling.
And how you define success. And again, I'm going to use the example of how a hack might be, a lot of people will say, I'm not deserving of a break. I'm going to reframe it. I am deserving of a break? Sometimes a better reframing is a break is going to help me drive performance later. So can you see how you depersonalize it? You kind of make it factual on something else. And it often helps people reframe the thought so it's realistic and not kind of toxic positivity, which some people will go, but I don't deserve a break. I don't feel like I've worked hard enough. Okay, that's very different to, well, if you have a break, statistically, you're more likely to drive effective performance. So it's not about deserving a break, but it's like, if I have a break, I'm more likely to perform better with that break. So doing that reframing in that context can often help people who find it difficult to say, I am worthy. Because a lot of people, to make that your identity is a long journey, you know? Mm-hmm. For you to be able to do that's really advanced in kind of your mindset work. Mm-hmm. But for someone who doesn't feel that way and it would feel toxic to them to say, I am worthy, it's like, okay, well, let's take a step back. I'm not worthy. What are you not worthy of? And try and understand it a bit more. So that exploration for people who are so far from, I guess, that self-actualization, that confidence, that, you know, ability to feel self-worth and be really open and opportunistic is meet them where they're at and say, okay, well, how can we look at this different? That's the perspective piece. I'm aware that I tend to be negative. The situational awareness is, okay, but when can I apply that differently in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
Getting a different perspective.
That is really powerful. I'm going to use that next time my mind does that. But do you know what's really interesting? And again, it's like I'm so happy to be open and honest, which I am on this podcast. But I've always said it. I have this. I can be very goal orientated, but I also want to make sure that I don't lose sight for the gratitude of what I've already created in my life. And I feel like sometimes that to get that sort of like pendulum sort of somewhere in the middle can be quite challenging for me. It's like, yes, I have these moments of real gratitude of like, you know, built this business over the last 7 years. And then I also have this goal going, well, it's not where you want to be yet. So it's like this two conflicting energies of like, really grateful for everything that's come into my life and that I continue to enjoy. And then this other side of me, it's like, yeah, but you're not where you need to be. And there's this expectation, this just driving force. And I feel like it's like that yin and that yang, and we all have it in us. And it's just being aware of both sides and making sure, like I try and always come back to that middle ground. And I'm very aware when I'm sort of pushing one a bit, because if I get too grateful, I can then sort of like take my foot off and just be like cruising too much and then floating around a bit. And if I go the other side, I get really like anxious and overwhelmed and will work crazy hours and do silly things. So just trying to keep myself in as much balance. I don't really like that word, but somewhere in the middle of these two sides of me, this pendulum that can kind of go on a bit of a swing sometimes.
Yeah. And you can only do that by reflecting and assessing and adapting. And I think that's the challenge is everybody, no one has perfection when it comes to that balance, but the faster you can recognize or have others support you to recognize moving from, you know, your A game to your B game. As soon as you've got that awareness, if you do something about it, then that's success in itself.
Mm, 100%. And that's a whole other topic in itself, about defining what success means to you in a world and where society will, this is what success is. Okay. And if you're not that and you don't have the house and the kids and the cars and the job, you're not a success. It's like, it's so rubbish. We need to move away from it. But Anu, I could honestly sit and chat to you all day, but I'm conscious of your time. You got a lot of people to manage and a job to do. So where can I send people to find out more about you? You know, if they might be interested in coaching, they might be interested in just having a reach out and further this conversation. So where do you hang out the most?
Our LinkedIn's probably where I hang out the most. So that's probably the best place to get me. I'm on Instagram or LinkedIn. That's kind of me. But I also hang out at different places around Melbourne here and there, and I travel a bit. So yeah, and look, if I'm really happy to share some trips, like tips and tricks for people, because that gives me a lot of joy. So it doesn't need to be for coaching. It can be, you know, I'd like to, I'm trying this and it's not working. What do you think? So any of that I can share, I'm more than happy to. And if it's not me, I can point them in to someone else who'd be equally, if not better, in that space.
Anu, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.